and welcome to the Courtney Turner Podcast. I'm your host, Courtney, and I'm super passionate about moving and thinking. On this show, we are going to dive into all things health, fitness, personal development, lifestyle, and political, sociocultural. I've always been fascinated by people, and I love learning from the experiences and stories of others. This has been a treat for me, and I hope this is enjoyable and useful for you. As always, if you have any questions, comments, or any way that I can make this a better experience for you, please don't hesitate to reach out. Welcome to the Courtney Turner Podcast. I'm here today with my friend Brock Laurie. He is an author, an attorney, and a radio host and podcast host. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on your show. I'm so excited to be here.
It's going to be a lot of fun. This is going to be so fun. I'm super, super excited about this. And I have to share this. So this is, I don't usually do in person because the way that some of my audience knows this, but a lot of people don't know this. But the reason I started this was mostly because, you know, we were very locked down in California and I was really depressed. I just felt isolated. I was anxious and I needed human interaction. And so one of the things I started doing was reading a lot. I had really tried to write, but that didn't work because I was so anxious and overwhelmed and depressed. And I'm an empath and I could feel just the weight of all the anxiety in the world. So I sat at the computer the first day for 10 hours and got nothing done. And I said, okay, this is not going to work. And I am a creative, so I know that creative process and you really can't force it.
Right.
So, you know, there's something to be said for discipline. There's also something to be said for you need to be inspired. So there's a balance. And I knew there's times where you just can't push that. So as you know, being an author, so you know that well. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to start reading. So I literally like ordered a whole bunch of books and and I loved that process. That was awesome. I had all this time, you know, I had both my jobs were done. The new career had just started was done. And so I had lots of time and I started reading, but then I was like, I have nobody to talk to about all these things. And I was, and my poor mother, who I chewed her ear off, and I was like, okay, I need to figure out, and people had suggested this podcast idea, and I was like, that would be awesome. Maybe somebody wants to talk to me about all these things, and hopefully somebody wants to listen. So it's a real treat to be able to do this in person, because I've been doing this all on Zoom.
Yeah.
So all that to say.
It's a lot more fun to be in person.
Yeah.
And it's very much something that I really have been pushing, and it's funny that you mentioned about COVID. Because the way people have responded to the COVID thing has been very interesting. I mean, you probably have noticed a pattern that those who are very, people of faith, let's put it that way, of strong faith, and to a lesser extent, people who are conservative, but still there's a correlation.
Sure.
I see things in correlations all the time.
Sure.
That's my thing, correlations.
So, correlation, like not causation necessarily, but correlation.
But, and very often there is a causation as well. But for example, you know, correlation, people who are happy, are they are more of them of the unfaithful people who don't have faith versus the people who do have faith? What is happiness? People who are willing to take chances, for example, and I see that there are patterns that are involved in that. So anyway, the reason why I bring it up is during the COVID days, I knew right away there's something wrong with this. It's not what God wants from us. He wants us to congregate. He wants us to communicate and to connect. That is very important for God. And I think it's natural in our instinct to want to connect. So I knew it would be destructive to my children. I have young children, three young children, 15, 12, and 8.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I knew that this would be very bad for them if I, first of all, if I scared them.
Of course.
To think, oh, there's this dreaded disease. You might die. Yeah. I didn't want it. I didn't want that. And I knew it was wrong.
Yeah.
Right. So what did we do? We went out. We went running. We went biking.
Oh,
we
took
We took more trips in 2020 than I've ever taken in my entire life.
Really?
On planes, everywhere.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I could... I mean, I feel like Johnny Cash, you know, that song, I've been everywhere, man. So I could almost list it, but I would have to remember it all. So I just knew that it would be dangerous for the kids to, first of all, scare them, and then secondly, to keep them isolated from their social interactions.
Yeah.
So right away, we had play dates with like-minded parents, and that's how it worked.
Yeah, and especially children, I mean, I think for all people, but children certainly under the age of 7, to be isolated, so much of their personality development, their cognitive function, their coping mechanism for navigating the world come from social interaction.
Yeah,
and to deprive them of that is, I think it's really cruel.
We are social beings. We need to interact one way or the other. And it's all good and well to wash your hands more often. It's all good and well, maybe even to socially distance with the 6 feet thing. Okay, I get that. But to close down all businesses, to run across the street when you're, you know, walking or jogging on your side of the street, it's a little insane.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's more
just
than insane.
Just sit in a car by yourself and like...
Yeah, what's up with that?
I don't know.
It's a frightening thing. So, but that's social interaction and COVID and such.
Yeah.
So... going back to, you know, the connection thing that we're talking about. Look, and this kind of relates to everything maybe that we'll be talking about, but I see everything in the context of what God wants from us.
Okay.
Not just what he wants from me, but what he wants from us as humankind.
Right.
And I know. He wants us to connect. He wants us to be...
So much of our
to bring out the best of each other, yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, and then I want to hear the rest of that, but I was going to say so much of our survival from primordial man is from social interaction.
Right.
Like, human being could not have survived as no man is an island, you know? No,
exactly right. And people go, they rip themselves apart mentally, physically, when they are isolated from everyone else. The greatest torture you could do, and I discussed this in my book, Rise of the Sex Machines.
Okay.
The greatest torture you can impose upon anybody is not, what do they call it, the water torture thing or anything.
Waterboarding.
Like waterboarding.
Mm-hmm.
Or putting them on a rack and stretching them, which is bad. I'm not saying it's a good thing. But the
not
worst,
my first choice.
Right. The worst torture, if you really want to break somebody, is solitary confinement. That's the worst punishment. We now know it breaks them down completely and permanently affects anybody suffering through solitary confinement. So, like the movie where Tom Hanks plays, I forget the name of the movie, where he's on an island and he crashed and there's the...
Castaway?
Castaway, yeah. That's it. We all feel for his pain, being alone.
Yep.
And he can't survive. And he gets to the point where he creates a relationship with a volleyball.
Yep.
And he actually paints it. I mean, as bad as it is, it's real to him. And he cries when he loses it.
And it's a coping mechanism
It's
for
a coping
him.
Mechanism.
Yeah.
We must have relationships.
Yeah.
But you don't need relationships if you don't believe in God. That's the funny thing about it.
So we
know this instinct to have relationships, but we reject it. By rejecting God, we reject all the things that flow with God.
So you can tell me if you disagree with this, but my thought is not that we don't need it if we reject God.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's that we reject the notion that we need it, but that that's more denial. Because human beings still don't survive. I mean, that's why there's a movie, Castaway, where he befriends a volleyball.
Right, exactly right.
That's why they made that movie, because it's true. Human beings need social interaction, and they cannot survive in a prolonged isolation. So just because we may deny, you can tell yourself you don't need water, but after 3 days, you know, you're going to find that might be a lie, you know?
That's true. It is just like water. It is. We crave relationships. If you were to be alone for 2 or 3 days, you really would go a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
All of us would.
Yeah.
But we take it for granted in the same way that we take air for granted, right? So, but we take away air in this room, and pretty soon, that's all we'll be thinking about. Right?
For sure.
That's give me air. And that's it. So relationships are very important. But look, this is something you and I spoke offline, as it were.
Yeah.
I love asking what appear to be basic questions, but we're living in a time where we have to revisit why we do the things that we do.
Yes.
Right? So I ask basic questions like, from the silly, like, why do we write from left to right yeah. in English.
Great.
And in Hebrew,
really
it's
made me think.
From Hebrew, from right to left. So there are reasons for it. But we don't have to get to that.
I was apparently the only person who's ever answered that
yes,
correctly.
Yes, I was very impressed with that. And the answer for that, by the way, is because in the ancient languages, it's the way people... All languages are written for right-handed people. So in the ancient languages, if you were to write, you would write with a tablet and stone. And if you're right-handed, you go like this, which is left to right.
Right.
Now, in more modern languages like English and all the Latin languages, that you write from left to right if you're right-handed. You prefer it because with a feather and the ink, you're not going to smudge.
And I'm left-handed, so I smudge all
So she understands.
Yeah.
She feels the pain. but it's interesting, right?
Yeah.
So that's, but putting that aside, the other questions that really fascinated me are like, why do we say hello? Why do we feel the need to nod to each other, even if we're just passing each other in the hallway?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Right? I mean, it's just... Yeah. What, do we really need to, why don't we just walk past each other, ignore each other's existence? But we don't, we normally don't do that, normally.
No.
We feel awkward when somebody doesn't acknowledge our existence.
We all, as human beings, we all need to be validated.
Right.
Yeah.
And the question is why, right? So, and we'll, I want to talk about that because we talk about philosophy class and everything else.
Yeah, I want to hear
so
this.
It's really fun. And then the question of how are you? Why do we say how are you?
Right.
You know, it's a... Because we don't really mean that we want to hear your life story. But it's a way of, you know, if I tell you, well, let me tell you, I have this wart that I'm trying to get rid of. I had it last night. I didn't know how to get rid of it. You know, like that. And,
right.
Oh, my wife. Now, you don't talk
you
like
want
that.
You want to show the person that you care that they exist and that you care
That's
how they're doing.
Yeah. That's what it is. But again, it begs the question, well, why should you care about my existence? Why? And then And then we'll get to a more powerful question, which is, why do we say please and thank you?
Right.
Why? And you're welcome to a lesser extent. And it fascinated me.
Mm-hmm.
Courtney, I got to tell you, I couldn't wrap my mind around why people get so insulted if you don't say please. If I were to tell me, hey, pass me your iPhone right there.
Mm-hmm.
Give it to me.
Well, so if I... That one presupposes that you're... demanding
right.
that I do it, and two, that I don't have the free will to say no.
Yeah, bingo. Free will. That's right. So, but even the atheist who categorically rejects God, the existence of God,
sure.
mocks
they
God
staunchly,
and so forth.
They're not agnostic and unsure. They deny
they totally deny
that there's any possibility.
Yeah. That person always, even he will get upset if you were to say that. How dare you speak to me like that, he would say. And he doesn't realize that he's actually evoking a godly concern when he does that. Because the reality is that even he is offended, and he doesn't know why he's offended.
Because he still thinks he's endowed with free will. He
right.
may not think that God gave him that
right.
inalienable.
Yeah. The reason, I mean, and look, and the way I figured this all out is I...
Yeah, so you said that a philosophy class is how... Is this where you...
Well, okay, I want to get to that because
Give
it's a lot of fun.
Give me this first, and then, I want to hear that.
So the way I figured out the thank you and the please business is, well, I don't say thank you or please to my dog, for example. I don't say, you know, his name is Samson, by the way, very cool.
Oh.
Hey, Samson. What's that?
What kind of dog?
He's a rescue. Very cute dog. I don't say, Samson, what do you think? If I throw you this stick out there, would it be okay with you, please, to bring back the stick and we'll do it over and over again? What do you think about that? No,
Samson
I say, fetch.
Samson has instincts and he knows to fetch.
Right. I'm not worried about his free will, and he's not worried about his free will.
Right.
In fact, I walk with him, and you know what I do? I put a leash on him. I do.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he doesn't care about his own freedom. Right?
Right.
In fact, he wants the leash.
Because he wants to be guided.
He wants to be
guided. And know that he's safe and protected.
So animals don't have free
will.
They're
pack animals, and so they need a leader.
Right. They don't yearn for freedom like you and I do. Likewise, with your iPhone, since we spoke about iPhones, you don't say, you know, hey Siri or hey Google or whatever. Would it be all right with you? Can you please tell me the time or the weather or what? And no, you just say, what's the time? Right, that's it.
Yeah.
And that fascinated me. So why is it that Siri and my dog don't get upset? My Siri went off. That's hysterical. Well, now I know what time it is.
Yeah, there you go. There's
that's really funny. You can't script this, folks. Yeah, I gotta tell you.
No.
So anyway, so so that fascinated me.
Sure.
And I came to realize that we get offended because the real reason why it offends you, if I don't say please, if I don't say thank you, even if I don't say those words, if I sound like I'm demanding, I am not acknowledging you as somebody who has the free will to right. say no.
Right.
So, I would very much like for you to pass the iPhone. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
But I understand you can say no. That's recognizing
and
your free will.
And by giving me that acknowledgement, that I'm more likely to say yes.
Yes, exactly right. There's a cute joke about this, by the way. And it's in my book, Atheism Kills.
Okay.
So it's an old joke from that my dad told me. He always had such rich jokes. Anyway, it's an old flea market in the olden days, like in the 1920s. Mm-hmm. And it's an Arab flea market. And there's the couple, an older couple, and they're selling stuff in their little, little booth. Yeah, there you go. That's what I'm talking about. And a messenger comes up, and he's got a telegram.
Okay.
And a telegram from your son in America. And they don't know how to read English, however. It's in English. So they said, I think, you know, Ahmed, two booths down, I think he knows how to read and write English. Let's ask him. Mm-hmm. So they go to Ahmed, but Ahmed's really busy. He's really gruff with them. Mm-hmm. And he goes, do you read and write English? Yeah, what? And he goes, can you read this telegram? Mm-hmm. And so he looks at it and he says, Mom, Dad, send money. And the mother and the father turn to each other. Can't believe how rude our son was.
Right.
It's incredible. How terrible. Mm-hmm. And they think about it and they just say, you know what? That's not our son. That's no way would he do that. You know what? Maybe Ahmed read it wrong. And you know, I think Muhammad, three booths down, he knows how to read and write English. Let's ask him. So they go to three booths down and he's a much easier going guy. He's not as busy. And they ask, you know, could you read it? And so he says, sure, and he picks it up and he goes, Mom, Dad, send money. And so the mother turns to the father and says, well, now that he's asking nicely. Right? So it's the same words.
Right.
But it's the tone, right?
Yeah.
So, and it kind of talks about what you and I are talking about right now, which is about understanding and respecting the humanity, the free will within us,
yep.
that we are indeed God's creatures. That's what's going on. And even the atheist doesn't realize that he needs it himself.
Right.
He would demand that you talk to him with respect also. But why?
Of course.
If we're just sophisticated animals,
right.
why would we need that?
Fascinating.
Right? So...
Yeah.
Going back to the question about philosophy.
Class, yes.
Because that's the big thing, right? So.
So my question before that, so prior to that class, what were your religious beliefs?
I was a total atheist.
Really?
Okay. I was an atheist. I was so impressed with myself, having discovered that there was no God when I was 11 years old, and I just knew better. And everyone else was a moron for not believing in God. For believing in God, right? Yeah.
Right.
And I just thought, oh, this is a fanciful thing, and Nietzsche was the best, and so on. And I wasn't precocious. I don't want to make it seem like somehow I was a brilliant guy. I now realize, I thought I was brilliant at the time, but I now realize I was just a child. Well, atheism is childish.
You may have been brilliant. You lacked wisdom. You were 11.
Okay. I'll take it. I'll take it. But I do think atheism is a childish
And then after I hear your story, we're going to read the Nietzsche quote, because people misinterpret that a lot.
Yes.
So,
okay, I would
on.
Love that. So I go through philosophy classes.
Yeah. Several, okay.
Several, yeah, at Stanford, and mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. And at the same time, I was working on my thesis.
Okay.
Okay, so, and well, I really
so
wanted to do
what was your major?
I was economics, but also humanities. So I did a humanities thing.
Okay.
So, and I really loved the idea of exploring ideas of Western civilization. So. Yeah. I stumbled upon a quote by both Voltaire and by Dostoevsky. It was the following. If there were no God, it would be necessary to invent him. Okay? And I thought that was so interesting. And I thought, okay, you know, Voltaire was, you know, he was basically an atheist, although people declare that he wasn't. But he was a functional believer, but truly he was an atheist.
He kind of subscribed to Pascal's wager.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Yeah, so, I act as if there is a God.
Act as if there is God, but didn't really know why there should be a God and why there is a God. And Dostoevsky, by contrast, he felt that there was a very serious God, and it was also necessary to invent him. They came from different angles. And I was fascinated by it. So my thesis was, does evil stem from the existence of God or the absence of God? Right? It's a small little topic. No big deal.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, like your thesis was like three words,
it was
right?
Yeah, it was a couple pages.
Yeah.
No, of course. I mean, obviously it was too huge a project, and eventually I narrowed it down to talking about Dostoevsky in The Brothers Karamazov. So it was fun.
Okay.
But really it was a very in-depth study, and it was a lot of fun. And in the process, because there's so much about free will in that book.
Right, yep.
And at the same time, I was taking these philosophy classes. And as you know, the number one thing that they conclude at the end of the day is that you cannot have free will without a higher power giving you the free will, right? Otherwise,
it's... Because what are you free from?
What are you free from? Exactly right. And otherwise, it's all determinism. And you know what determinism is, right? Determinism, for those who are not as familiar, it's the idea is that everything you do is really the product of something that preceded it, that caused it. So think of your life like a billiard ball, right? And a pool table, right? That's all it is. Wherever you are today, it's a result of a bunch of previous actions that led you to what you are today.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I ask my atheist friends, is that what you believe? Do you believe in determinism? And some of them who are intellectually honest say, yes, I do. I don't believe in free will. So that's intellectually honest. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then I said, I'm gonna hit you in the face right now. What will your reaction be?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll be angry, they say. And I say, why? If I hit you in the face right now, I can't help myself.
Right.
It was the product of whatever happened before me. Why would you hold me accountable for punching you in the face?
Yep.
And they don't have, I mean, they can't have an answer to that.
Right, sure.
So they want accountability on the one hand.
Mm-hmm. Because they want somebody to blame and to make sense of things, yeah.
Right, because they have to live in a world of accountability, whether they like it or not.
Right.
But at the same time, their philosophy is such that they don't really believe in accountability. They don't believe in free will. So now, there are a lot of people yelling at this video and this audio right now saying, what are you talking about? I'm an atheist and I believe in free will. Mm-hmm. No, you don't. You haven't thought that through.
Mm-hmm.
That's like saying, I don't know, that I believe in letters. I believe in reading because I've seen a couple of letters.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the same thing. Free will, by definition, has to come from a creator that gives you free will. It cannot come evolutionarily through survival of the fittest. You explain that to me, my dear atheist friends, and you'll be the first one in all of Western civilization philosophy classes who's figured it out, okay?
Right.
So don't just assume that evolution will have an answer to this. It doesn't. It can't.
Right.
So evolution, and it's cute. I don't believe in pure evolution.
Mm-hmm.
But the notion that, you know, a brown bear eventually becomes a white bear because he's camouflaging better and therefore survives better, that's one thing.
Sure.
That's a far cry from having free will. Like, how does free will help us survive in the wild, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then how come animals don't have free will?
And they still survive.
And they still survive.
Right.
Right? For that matter, how come animals don't have humor? Right?
Right.
I mean, you never see, somebody saying, well, you know, Bob died. Well, why did he die? Well, he wasn't funny enough.
Right? Well, actually, that's probably true. You probably will never hear that. However, I would argue the case that humor can help you survive.
Oh, yes. But the question is, that's humor for us, for we humans.
Yeah.
Right? But humor doesn't help my dog.
No.
Right? It won't help him survive at all. No. So the question, again...
Although sometimes I think they laugh at us.
Or they wonder, like, why does he keep on leaving my house? Why doesn't he just stay home? Yeah. So I think they are inquisitive about this business. But it's funny because... So it goes back to the questions, right?
Right.
I always ask myself questions. Why are things the way they are?
Right.
Here's another example. Beauty. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, we're not talking about a beautiful woman, a beautiful, you know, handsome guy. We're talking about the notion of appreciating beauty. Mm-hmm. You'll never see two animals looking at a sunset and say, wow, check that out. Have you ever seen such a sunset, Fido? No, I have not, Rover. Okay, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And it's certainly not a matter of survival. Why do we have to appreciate beauty to survive as a species? But like you said, it certainly helps enjoy life. And
which I think is integral to survival in yeah. some regards. I mean, you know, depression is a real thing. Lack of purpose is a real thing.
Yeah.
And these things are very much threatening to our existence and our survival, literally.
Right. Yeah.
And having an appreciation of beauty, having humor, you know, these kinds of joys are integral to our ability to move forward.
Yeah. I'm with you 100%. Yeah. But that's for humans.
Yeah, right.
Right? So the question
I was talking about humans. Right.
Yeah.
Birds don't need it.
Yeah. Part of me wonders, why are they animals at all? Right? I mean, yeah, you can talk about Circle of Life and you can sing from the Lion King if you want. But if there were no animals, I mean, part of my question to God is, you gave us animals so that we can see the difference between us and the animals, right? Right?
Oh, interesting.
Because, boy, oh, boy, are there a lot of differences. Not just humor, not just beauty, not just music. Mm-hmm. Storytelling.
Yes.
Right?
Well, humor, and we human beings are the only creature. So I think this is my thought, but I think part of the reason that we have such an appreciation for storytelling is because we have a priori knowledge. And animals don't have, they have instincts, but they don't have a priori knowledge.
Right.
And because we have a priori knowledge, we resonate with stories.
Yeah.
So I think it's twofold. It's the a priori knowledge, but then it's also because, and this also differentiates us from animals, we are the only beings that can learn by proxy. So
interesting. Yes.
Right? Like
that's a great point.
You can tell me a story of something that happened to you, and I can learn from it. I don't have to go through that myself.
Yeah.
Or I can, you know, whether it's a good or bad experience, you know, if it's a good experience, I can be like, oh, this is something I can do in my life. And I've learned and I've now skipped several steps that you had to take. Or if it's a bad story, like you tell me a story of you walking through that glass door, which I have done because I'm blind in one eye and I do things like that.
Yeah.
Because I have no motion parallax. But you could watch me and be like, you know, and one of the times when I did this, it happened to be dusk and, you know, they just cleaned the windows and, you know, so I could see how maybe it could happen to other people too, but somebody watching me do that is going to be like, oh, that's glass. I might not walk right through that.
Right. Yeah. The notion of cautionary tale is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Some parents, their kid took drugs and now he's dead.
And that's true for the negative stories, but even the positive stories, we learn by proxy. Animals don't learn by proxy.
No. Oh, so I love the way you phrased that. That's exactly right. And it's funny also is that when we talk about stories.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you're on a date with somebody and you say, what kind of music do you like? Mm-hmm. Right? How many times have you ever heard somebody on a date saying, I'm not a music guy. I don't like music. Right? No, he likes music.
Right.
It's just a question of what kind. Maybe he likes jazz, blues, and so on.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I love classical music. P.S. I like rock and roll music and a little alternative music like Radiohead. Okay,
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, that's me too.
All right, good. All right, good. So that's the fun part. But you never, you assume that the person next to you likes music of some kind.
Sure.
Likewise with stories,
yeah.
right? So if you would say, oh, I got a great story to tell you, right? And the person says, listen, I'm not a story guy. Sorry. Like, what? What do you mean you're not a story guy?
Right.
Of course you're a story guy. Now, if you tell a story well, that's another story.
Right.
But that to me is fascinating. Why do we like stories? Why do we enjoy humor so much? Why is it so essential to our lives?
Right.
And as you said, if you don't have humor in your life, if you don't have beauty, if you don't have music, you might very well be depressed.
Yeah.
And why is that the case? So I'm coming around to all this main point, like, this is the way I discovered God. First through free will.
Wow.
Because I know, I accepted that there is free will. The determinism world did not work for me. I don't buy that for a second.
Sure.
You really have to be, it's far-fetched to believe that everything you do is the product of something that you have no accounting for. Mm-hmm. I don't want to live in that world. I don't believe in that world.
Yeah.
Everyone is accountable, and everyone does have. And the reason why we send people to prison is not because we want to just prevent them from doing another crime.
Mm-hmm.
But because we are holding them accountable, we are punishing them.
Yeah, and also the learning by proxy. We are showing other people these are the consequences you may incur.
Exactly right. So God to me is, I mean, these are evidences of God to me.
Interesting.
Free will, the massive amount of distinctions between animals and humans. I actually started a list, and I'm now on item number 413 of the differences. And they're major differences that we just don't even think about. The notion of progress, for example. A lion doesn't think about, how can I be a better lion today, right? How can I make the world better for other lions? Mm-hmm. It doesn't think that way.
Right.
You know, I mean, in my book, I joke, I say, you know, I think I use a puma for some reason, and he's sitting on a limb of a tree, and he says to me, well, here I sit on this limb, just like my pappy before me and his pappy before him, right? He doesn't even think about that. He has no sense of history.
Right.
He has no sense of the future, for that matter. Yeah. We humans do. There's
Absolutely.
Another difference. So, which is related to the story, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the part I love, the discovery of God and the certainty of God.
Right.
So when I hear, and a lot of your listeners are now thinking to themselves, because I know how they think, because I was an atheist.
You know how every single one of them thinks.
Well, no, the atheists, I do.
Sure, okay.
I do. I can out-atheist any
atheist. You can out-atheist
any atheist.
That's, okay.
I know that's a bold assertion, a bold claim, but I know what they're thinking. I know their arguments. I'll make their arguments for them.
Okay.
And in fact, in my book, Atheism Kills, I lay out the argument for atheism. For atheism.
Awesome.
And it's good.
Yeah.
It's really good. Now, I got, atheists are not the most loving of people. When they read a book called Atheism Kills, they misinterpret it to say, oh, all atheists themselves kill or murderers. No. they can't even connect it. Like, you may be a communist, right? But communism kills.
Absolutely.
Is that fair to say that?
Unequivocally.
But you may love socialism and communism, but understand that ideology, if it's embraced by government, kills.
We have 100 million corpses to prove it.
Thank you. Exactly right. So that's the point. Now, the atheists will say that, you know, they are accountable, they love free will, it's all about logic and many other things just like that. But then you push it a little bit further.
Right.
And you say, okay, well, if everything's about logic, because that's their ultimate answer, right?
Yeah.
That
sure.
Well, I don't want to kill you because I don't want you to kill me, and it just makes sense, don't you know? Right. That is ultimately where they go. Okay, and the atheist is now nodding his head. Yeah. What's wrong with that? He's saying that right now.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And here's what's wrong with it, my friend. The problem
there's no
with
morality
it is,
in that, by the way.
There's no morality. Sure, but oh, and they claim to be moral, by the way. But
okay.
But then your answer to that is no, you don't.
Right.
You don't believe in morals. Because morals suggest a one standard rule that everyone understands. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But if there is no God, then morality is always a floating point. It's always depending on the circumstances. Always.
Right.
So morality, one area
subjective.
Of the world, and one time in the world, it's all is always different. So they can't have it that way.
Right.
But going back to logic, so they say, well, you know, what's wrong with that? We just all understand that. Well, the problem with that is that you don't have. There's logic, your logic, and there's my logic. And I give an example of somebody in my office, let's say. And I'm up for a promotion, and so is he. And we're gunning for the same promotion.
Okay.
Only one man can get it.
Right.
We'll call him Johnson, right? And Johnson, well, here's how I reason it.
Okay.
I'm an older man. Let's say I'm 65. I'm not 65, but let's say I was 65. Okay. And I've got a family and grandkids mm-hmm. and a lot of gambling debt. I don't have gambling debt, but you get the idea. I owe a lot of money to the IRS. Okay? Mm-hmm. I need that promotion, damn it.
Right.
I need it now. And by the way, if I don't get the promotion, I'll be left out and I'll basically have to exit from the company. And Johnson, by contrast, he's 33 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a family.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So he doesn't need it.
He doesn't need it as much. And he'll have other opportunities for promotion later on in his life.
Mm-hmm.
What's to stop me, using my logic,
because mm-hmm.
I got to take care of my family
right.
and my debts.
Yeah.
Guido is out there. He's ready to break my legs.
Right, right. Right.
And yeah. What's to stop me from putting some porn on his computer?
Just to
kind of, you know, sabotage him.
Yeah.
Right? What's wrong with that? Why wouldn't I do that? It's logical for me to do that. Or
sure.
forget about that. Maybe not porn. Maybe just to say a little gossip. Suggest that he cheated a little bit
mm-hmm.
here or there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Why not do that? It's very logical.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other logic, of course, is that you don't do that because it's not right. But why? Why is that not right?
Mm-hmm.
He's taking care of his family. So, look, I'm a lawyer. I can tell you, everyone.
This is like the Les Mis question, by
yeah.
the way. I mean, it's a much
yes,
lower,
I was gonna say.
Like, less
yeah.
you know, intensified version. But
yeah.
yeah, it's the Les Mis question.
Yeah, it's, what's his name? Jean Valjean,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And he steals bread for
yeah.
his family. I mean, it was logical at the time,
yep.
but it's still a theft.
Exactly.
Right. And this is what the law is all about, right? If there's one universal logic that always applies to everybody all the time,
yeah.
we wouldn't need a system of government, a system of courts.
Yep. And so this will bring me kind of to, I'm really curious your take on this, because so in terms of, I believe all human beings have to subscribe to some universal moral ideal.
Right.
Without religion, you're going to replace it with something. So if
right.
you don't believe in God, there's going to be some, you're going to fill that need to subscribe to a universal moral ideal.
Right.
So we have seen a, you know, a loss of God, religion in society. I'm just thinking of how to word this, but
uh-huh.
what do you, because I don't want to give you my answer, but, and then, yeah, I'm curious your thoughts on it. What do you see you were saying, like, that's why we need courts. What
right.
what do you see has been the result of, I think it's not just a loss. I think there's been kind of like a stripping of. In fact, this is probably a good place to read the quote, and then we
mm-hmm.
I'll hear
sure.
your thoughts
oh,
on
I
it.
Love
but,
that.
Okay, so this is from Nietzsche, and it's his famous God is dead quote. And I'm just going to preface by saying that I think a lot of people think of Nietzsche as saying, like, that this means there is no more God. But that's not fully what he's saying.
Right.
He's saying, God is dead, God mm-hmm. remains dead, and we have killed him. Yet his shadow still looms. How shall we comfort ourselves, the murderers of all murders? What is holiest and mightiest of all the world what is holiest and mightiest of all that the world has yet owned has bled to death under our knives. Who will wipe this blood off of us? What water is there for us to clean ourselves? With Nietzsche. So, yeah, so human beings are responsible for killing God, is essentially what he's saying,
right.
and they suffer the consequences of that. And I don't know how much of Nietzsche you know, but he was really prophetic, and he predicted, you know, all the atrocities pretty much of the 20th century.
Yes, he did. And sadly, Hitler misinterpreting him or wanting to extend whatever he did say,
yeah.
Because beyond good and evil, for example. Took it to a level where we need to get rid of this nonsense of the notion of good and evil
mm-hmm.
and move forward with what is necessary.
Right.
And hence the concentration camps on the fascist side and the gulags on the communist side.
Right.
So it's really
fascinating. Which are both born of the same ideology.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, communism,
nuance
fascism.
Differences, but
very
totalitarianism. And revolt.
It's funny. I always say it in the context of like the victim, right? Mm-hmm. Before you slaughter me, mm-hmm. I just need to know: are you a fascist or a communist? Because that's important to me right now.
Really like, important.
It's not important, of course. So,
no. So I guess my question about all of it is like: so what do you think? I think that religion has been stripped. It's not just that it's been lost. Mm-hmm. And what do you think the consequences of society is as a result?
Wow. I mean, it is so destructive. The way I look at it and the metaphor I use is to take God out of civilization and expect civilization to continue in a positive, ever improving way is like taking the sun out of the solar system and expecting the planets to continue to circle around in perfect orbit.
Wow.
Okay? How do you like that for a metaphor?
It's a great metaphor. Very powerful.
Yeah.
It's because a little
that's what
disturbing.
It is. Yeah, it is. You take out God and you'll go back to the world as it was without the Judeo-Christian God. It ain't pretty. It just ain't. You don't want to live in that world.
What do you think because as I'm saying, I believe, and I don't know if you agree with this, that all human beings need to subscribe to some universal moral ideal.
Yes.
What do you think it's been replaced with? Because it has to be replaced, right?
Sure.
People are filling, and I didn't make this up, but I have a friend who says, you know, it's a God-shaped hole, so it needs to be filled, right?
Always needs to be filled. If you don't have God as the center of your life, then you will have something else as the center of your life. And that is very floating point. So that might be for one person, climate change, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That everything has to be about climate change. I know more than a couple of people that is their mantra, and they can't think of anything else. There are other people who engage in conspiracy talk.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they talk about is conspiracies. I know somebody who believes that the Rothschild family is still in charge of the world. P.S. That's another correlation. People who believe in conspiracies tend to be atheists. Okay, very few religious people, very few. Mm-hmm. Believe strongly in conspiracies. It's very interesting. Yeah, I've done a lot of studies about that.
Fascinating.
Then there are other people who believe in you know, whatever the cause du jour might be. Okay, so COVID. This is part of the reason why, you know, I can tell a religious person when they're not wearing a mask, when they give me a real handshake today.
Uh-huh.
I know that these people have faith in God. I always joke around. A handshake now is the secret handshake, right?
So,
just a secret handshake. So, and I know because, first of all, they're not afraid.
Yeah.
But the people who wear these masks in their car.
Yeah.
On the hiking trails where they're totally alone.
I know.
Okay? Why did they do it? It's not because they forgot.
Right.
Oh, I didn't realize I had this mask on all the time.
Didn't realize I can't breathe. I'm suffering hypoxia. Yeah. Oh, my God. I didn't realize.
Exactly right. And they're running sometimes. I'm a runner, and I can tell you,
it's not fun.
So why do they do this? They do it because they feel like they're doing something great for the world. They are saving civilization. They're saving lives. What could be a greater purpose than saving lives?
Right.
And by wearing it and also demanding other people to wear it, they are doing something super noble.
Right.
But that's their hole, to use your phrase.
Yeah.
They're filling in that way. Suddenly they have purpose somewhere. It's really fascinating.
It is. And they have all these rituals like you would in a religion.
Exactly right.
Yeah, so that's a great analogy. It's very powerful.
Thank you.
A little terrifying.
Well, it has to be that way, right? I mean, when you think about it, like I don't know who said it, but if there is no God, then nothing matters. If there is a God, then God is all that matters. Right? And I think there's a lot to it. If we are all, if God has created everything, then we are all creatures of God. Then whatever we do is in connection with God's will.
Mm-hmm.
And God is watching, for that matter. We're accountable and everything else. Now, putting aside whether there is a God or not,
mm-hmm.
then we ask the question, which world do we want to live in?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Do we want to live in a world where God is in charge, God has created everything,
mm-hmm.
We are accountable to God at the end of the day? Or do we want to live in a world where everything is random? We're here by random circumstances, that the pool table analogy that I made. Mm-hmm. And therefore, do whatever you want, so long as you can get away with it. Mm-hmm. Which world would you rather live in? Again, that doesn't in any way prove the existence of God. It just it's a preference at some point. Where would you rather live in? And most people, of course, would say, I'd rather live in a world where we have a civilization, mm-hmm. where we are accountable to each other, where there is a rule of law, where we progress, where we learn from stories, where we have humor and beauty and such. Okay, if that's the world that you want, mm-hmm. then don't you want to find out the reasons why you should believe in such a world? Right? Wouldn't you want that? Right? I mean, in the same way, like if I want to become an American citizen, mm-hmm. right? I know that I should probably learn up on American history, mm-hmm. and probably learn to speak English in a significant way.
Right.
Now, that's just the way it is. If that's what you want, these right. are the things that you should also do in order to get there. So I have a friend who, sadly, his daughter died. It was a tragic situation. He was an atheist. And he knows that I'm a believer. And I'll never forget what he said. He said, you know, I really wish I could believe in God. It would give me so much more comfort.
And
right?
Yep.
As an atheist, but I just can't, and I really would love to do that. And I said, if you really would love it, mm-hmm. then why not talk to me or anybody else who can help you see intellectually why you should believe in God and why there is a God? Mm-hmm. But you're not interested, are you? He's like the guy that wants to be an American citizen, but refuses to take a plane trip to America for that matter. And he wants all the benefits of being an American citizen without ever living there, without knowing any of its history or mm-hmm. studying any of it, and mm-hmm. without speaking English. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard
right.
to do those things, right?
So, well, a lot of people don't want to do the work. I mean, it's kind of like people would like to look like an athlete, but a lot of people don't want to put the work in to be an athlete.
You know why I hate that analogy?
Why?
I really hate it.
Really?
Because I didn't think about it. Oh. That's a better analogy than what I...
Sorry.
It's a fantastic analogy. They want the great figure. They mm-hmm. want the great weight or whatever it is. They want the great looks.
The glory of
yeah.
it, yeah.
But they don't want to put in the time.
Yep.
That's what it is.
Atheism, because it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Atheism is fascinating to me because, and I know just how the atheist thinks.
Right.
It really is a blessing in many ways that I went through that phase for 10 years. And I know it so deeply.
Right.
And the atheist will tell you that you, as a believer, that you're a moron. Really, they think very little of you.
Yes, okay? Yes. I hear that a lot.
Yeah. You want to surrender your brain to this God guy, or this Jesus guy, as the case may be. Yeah. And, you know, whatever you want to believe, that's fine. I guess it's a free country, but you're crazy, right? For doing so. And you're doing it only because it's an escape mechanism. You are avoiding the hard work of reality. That's what they'll tell you. Hmm. They'll say, you know, I'm a man of science. I'm a woman of science. And that's what I believe in. Right? Mm-hmm. Am I right, atheist? That's exactly what you believe. And they'll say that. And you know what the response I say is? Are you kidding? You think it's easier being a believer? Really? We have to go to church or synagogue, as the case may be. We have to be accountable. We can't gossip. We can't cheat on our wives and spouses, generally. We can't lie. We can't gossip, right? And we know that God is watching. You think that's easier somehow?
Right.
That we're doing for what purpose? So that we can think to ourselves that if we really believe hard, mm-hmm. somebody will let us into this place called heaven? Really? That's what you think that's about? That's what the atheist thinks.
Right, okay.
He thinks he's doing the hard work, but he's the lazy one. He doesn't ask the questions that you and I have been asking throughout this podcast. He doesn't ask, why do we have beauty? Why do we have purpose? Why do we tell stories and humor and all these things? Why do we strive for anything?
Right.
Right? What is morality? Can we have morality without God? These are hard questions.
Really hard questions.
Yeah. I mean, part of me would love to go be back an atheist. Pardon me. You know why?
Why?
Because, well, then you can do anything, right? I can grab that woman from the street and just, you know, have fun. And so long as I don't get caught, well, then everything's good. I can kill my friend Johnson or put porn on his computer, as we talked about,
right, because
I need to get ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I always ask, why do, if you just want to make money, why not go into the drug cartel business?
Right.
Honestly, why?
Yeah,
it's very logical.
Yeah.
You can make a lot of money.
Totally.
I learned that from Breaking Bad. but really,
Education,
I mean, he made tons
show.
Of money. Yes. And
power of storytelling, right? Yeah, there.
There it is. It really is. But you can make millions of dollars. You can be filthy rich if you join a drug cartel.
Right.
Now, of course, you risk, you know, being, but it's only because it's illegal, you see. If it were legal, as it now is becoming,
right. Then
there's so much more money to be made.
Mm-hmm.
So why not? I mean, seriously, as an atheist, why not?
Right.
You don't have to take the drugs yourself. And the people who are buying your drugs, well, they're doing it of their own free will. There's that phrase again.
Mm-hmm.
Or their own volition, to use a non-religious phrase.
Sure.
So that's on them, not on you. And
right.
you can make a lot of money.
Okay.
Why have kids? That's a question I pose in Rise of the Sex Machines.
Okay.
Why does an atheist have kids? I tell you, I remember going into a park once.
Uh-huh.
My little boy was about 2 years old.
Okay.
And I saw a nice couple. You could tell they were about 35, 34.
Okay.
And they had their baby in a baby Bjorn. You know those things that you bob up and down?
Sure.
You could tell this is their one and only child.
Right.
They're not going to have any more kids after this one. And again, not to hold them in contempt, I'm simply saying you could tell.
Yeah.
And we got to talking and exchanged names and everything else. And when is he teething yet? Is he, whatever. Is he sleeping through the night? Basic questions like that. After about 15 minutes of conversing, I said, can I ask you a personal question? Well, yeah, sure. And I said, why'd you have this kid? Why?
Mm-hmm.
There's a question of why, right?
Yeah,
I love
yeah.
asking why.
Yeah.
Why do you have this kid?
Right.
And I'll never forget it, Courtney. The mother was bobbing up the kid up and down, and as she's bobbing, she's turning to her husband and says, yeah, honey, why did we have this kid?
No!
Yeah. Like, she just didn't think about it. And I asked the atheist over and over again, why did you have children, if you ever had children? A lot of them don't.
Mm-hmm.
They have one, maybe two. Why? And they don't really have an answer. Their answer that I heard from a couple people is, well, I want to pass on my values.
Yeah, or
right?
A lot of people say my genes. I mean, usually.
Yeah, but why do you want to pass on your genes? Why does it matter? If you're just an accident,
mm-hmm.
why would you produce another accident? Right? And as we understand from global warming, the more people we have, the more they spew out this thing called carbon, and they're otherwise using Earth's precious resources, right?
Sorry.
But it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you have kids? Well, in fact, there is something in England called birth strike, where women are saying, I'm not going to have a kid.
Well, of course. We have to depopulate.
Depopulate.
Yeah.
That is the new notion.
I mean,
so
humans are evil.
Humans are evil. So why would you have a kid?
Yeah.
Right? So it's selfish in their point of view. Whereas for you and me, and for the believer, generally speaking, he sees having children not as selfish, but as a joy, yes,
mm-hmm.
but as an obligation
right.
to civilization.
Right.
We need good people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's truly on passing on the values of God
right.
to his children.
Wow, that's beautiful and profound. So we were talking a little bit about like what happens when you strip a society of of religion, of God, of belief, you were using the analogy of like communism kills.
Right.
And I kind of, have you ever seen the movie Arguing the World?
Arguing the World? I have not, but I like the title.
Okay, yeah. So it was a documentary, and it was about the the New York intellectuals, and that was when the communists first came to the United States.
Oh yeah,
in you know the early 1900s, and they went into the ghettos of New York City, and they went targeted. You know who was in the ghettos? It was like the Irish, the Italians, and the Jews.
Okay,
and the Irish and the Italians said that they wanted no part of. You know,
this communism business.
Yeah, because it's atheistic. And they would have to abandon Catholicism.
Right.
Catholicism has gone very differently now than it was then.
Right.
But, you know, they recognized that and they said they would have no part of it. The Jews, who desperately wanted to assimilate, chose, you know, to align with them.
Right.
And we've seen where that... It's a very good movie. You should definitely see it. But... The reason I'm bringing it up is because I'm curious your thoughts. Like, I feel like in a lot of ways they've replaced, a lot of atheists have replaced their, you know, belief in religion or subscribing to some sort of higher power.
Yeah.
To a Marxist kind of ideology.
Yeah.
Of some variation.
It's very tantalizing because it promises, look, people need a sense of order.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they realize it or not, they need structure in their lives. I mean, even the traffic rules, you know, that we have to have structure. The Germans have an expression for this, and not to equate it with fascism or Nazism.
Right.
It just happens to be a German expression, and it's Ordnung muss sein.
Okay.
That means there must be order.
Okay.
That they take to an extreme sometimes.
Yes.
but we do have an instinct for order. We want order in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And God provides that sense of order. When I wake up, when you wake up, we might very well think, how can I do God's will today? Right? It's a nice question to ask yourself. If you're making a major decision, sometimes people pray on it.
Right.
They have a sense of structure there. Likewise with the way we raise kids. You know, why did I have kids? I know why I had kids. Structure, structure, structure. People without God, they still have this instinct for structure. And they'll find it in communism, socialism, or fascism, which we agree are more or less the same thing.
Totalitarianism.
It's such a small distinction of difference. But I think that, I hope that answers your question. I think it's a craving for structure.
So now I have a question. This is just to play kind of devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
Is it possible, do you think, for someone to replace it with something that could be good? I think that's presupposing we agree that's the negative. It's not good.
Right.
It's evil. But
right. I don't know. I mean, man has tried countless times to replace God one way or the other.
Right.
It has never worked. It has always led to horrific civilizations of barbarism, concentration camps, the gulags, torture, and the loss of freedom. So it's like that expression, you know, democracy is the worst form of government except for all the others, right?
Yeah.
So this God thing is the worst form of civilization except for all the others. So I they have not yet come up with a better plan. We now know that. And the sad thing is people don't understand it takes so long to develop the civilization that we now have that they take for granted everything that they have.
Right.
And this is why the atheists can make this, frankly, a stupid argument that we'll be just great with each other if we just live by logic, which is it's a stupid argument because, like I said, your logic might be different than mine. In the German culture, way back when, before Christianity came to the scene, murder, they didn't even call it murder. Killing was, you know, par for the course. It's what you did. And it was perfectly fine. And you were noble if you killed in order to advance your position. There was nothing wrong with it. So it has been tried, but people just take for granted that all the things that we now have today, especially in America, the notion of accountability, the rule of law, that you will be held accountable if you murder, steal, rape, commit fraud, all those things. People like to live in that world.
Right.
And they think that you can, now that we've established it, we can just get rid of the guy who gave it to us in the first place, right?
Very ungrateful.
It is. It's like the kid who who's been raised by his parents.
Mm-hmm.
And now he says, and very well, mind you, and then mm-hmm. he says, you know what? I don't believe in parenting. No.
I raised myself.
Yeah, everyone can do it themselves. We just got to be sensible about it, right? No. Parenting is necessary.
Right.
God is necessary. And it's been tried in every which way, but it just can't work.
So you talk about, like, especially in America. So I'm curious your thoughts on this.
Yeah.
Do you believe that, I guess the first part of the, it will be a two-part question.
Yeah.
The first part of it, do you believe that America is essentially different than other nations? And in good ways, bad ways. Secondly, do you think that there was some sort of divine intervention in the inception of America?
Yes and yes. Mm-hmm. It is clear to me that America is very different. We can at least agree to that,
yeah.
whether you're an atheist or not, that America truly is different. So, and not only that, but Europeans, you know, from where we came,
mm-hmm.
They feel the same way. They understand that America is different. I lived in England. I lived in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
I also live in Japan, by the way. But especially in England and Germany, one of the most common things that native Germans and native Englishmen would ask me is, what's up with the guns and the God? What's up? Like they think we're crazy, especially with the God business.
Yeah.
The guns is just another thing altogether, but they don't get this God
business.
God
is more insane to them than
it's insane.
The guns.
It's insane to them.
Interesting.
That they think that we're a wackadoodle. And I respond to them by saying, the reason why America is so distinct and so wonderful is precisely because of God. Because we still celebrate God, that we are who we are. If you don't have God, then there is no reason to make your country an exceptional country. Look what's happening. I mean, among the progressives, especially the atheist progressives, and most of the progressives now are atheist,
yeah.
Let's face it. Very few. I mean, yes, you can give me a couple of anecdotes. Don't tell me about your Aunt Tilly or something like that. I know. There's a one or two. But again, correlations. By and large, mm-hmm. Most progressives are atheists, and most atheists are progressives. Okay? And that's not progressives in a good sense. They really want change. And one of the changes is, like, we don't see the importance of the distinction between America and all the other countries. They call for open borders. What did Obama say? I see America is exceptional, but I see America exceptional in the same way that Greece sees itself as exceptional, modern-day Greece. So, in other words, it's all a form of chauvinism and mm-hmm. narcissism on our part. But no, I think that we are objectively exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
And the world looks at us as exceptional for a reason, and that we should be exceptional. And frankly, all the other countries should follow our lead,
mm-hmm.
including loving God and bringing God into their respective nations. You do that, and great things will happen for you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do it, and you'll become a country that's godless.
Right.
Not a good history in that department. Things fall apart without God.
Right.
It always does. You'll have a higher incidence of depression. You'll have a higher incidence of suicides, of drug use, of crime. Of fraud, of lack of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
The music will get worse. The art will get worse. There's a correlation between our increasingly godless society
mm-hmm.
and the art that we produce.
Yeah,
look at this garbage.
The postmodern era is after the death of the quote unquote death of God. Yeah.
And in the old days, even up to 1900 or so,
mm-hmm.
much of the art was about the glory of God.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the light that they used. And,
yeah.
and they would depict a biblical scene. But even if they didn't depict a biblical scene, there was something, there had to be purpose to the art. Now you have somebody mimicking a toilet
mm-hmm.
and saying, ah, magnifique, it's it's art. It's garbage.
Yeah.
And we know that's garbage. Same thing with music. There's a lot of good music out today. We talked about Radiohead before.
Yes.
There's some really good, interesting music. But a lot of it really is garbage. And then you have to ask it, why do people resonate to music at all? Right. You know, sometimes everyone who's listening to this podcast, yourself mm-hmm. included, sometimes you hear a song and it just brings you to a different state, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it alters your brainwave states.
It alters,
yeah,
but in a glorious way.
Mm-hmm.
Like Hey Jude, I say it only because, first of all, I like the song. I think it's a beautiful song. But everyone knows the song Hey Jude,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I'm just using that as an example. The lifting that it does for
mm-hmm.
you, it's not just, you know, touching brainwaves. There's something spiritual about it,
mm-hmm.
right? And it summons your spirit that animals simply can't achieve. So we're going to see a degradation of music, a degradation of art,
yeah.
A degradation of philosophy, for that matter,
mm-hmm.
and a degradation of the exceptionalism of America and its purpose. Not only that, but you'll also see a degradation. I talk a lot about this in The Rise of the Sex Machine, the family structure.
Yeah.
You'll see, and you're not going to like what I'm going to say right now. Nobody's going to like what I'm going to say.
Oh.
But I'm making a prediction. You'll see a rise in not just polygamy. There's already polyamory going on,
which is
rampant.
Yeah.
I predicted this 10 years ago. You're going to see a lot of people just getting together. And the reason is purely economic. And it's also lustful. It's the why not approach. They don't believe in God. And, you know, the more the merrier. What's wrong with having four people? We all love each other. Five people, six people. So, and not only that, but if we're going to raise kids together, hey, that's four incomes to take care of Johnny and not just two.
Oh, interesting.
You see?
So go back to like a tribal kind of...
Well, they can... Yeah, I think it is tribal.
Tribal.
But there's your logic for you. Right. Like, we loved little Johnny. We'll take care of him. And Johnny gets that much more love. That's their logic, you see?
Mm-hmm, right.
And it's happening now. And this is not far-fetched.
No.
But you know what is far-fetched so far right now? As
what?
We sit here at 2021. And you're not going to like this.
Oh.
This is the part you're really going to be afraid to hear.
Okay.
There's going to be a rise in the acceptance of incest.
Yeah. I can totally see that.
And
I forgot what the word for it, but with animals, what's that? Bestiality? Is that what
bestiality,
it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the notion there is, like, what's wrong with that?
Right.
Right? I mean, the animals, they don't really care. They don't have free will, sort of thing.
Right.
But the incest part, you're going to see a lot of that. And there's logic to
mm-hmm.
that, too. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's distorted logic. Don't
mm-hmm.
get me wrong. I'm fully against incest. But why, you know, when most people think about the evil of incest,
mm-hmm.
they say, well, why is it evil? And then they'll say, well, because we don't want deformities for birth that might result from that. Okay, got it. What if it's two brothers, two sisters? They ain't going to produce.
Right.
Right? And what if they decide, you know what, we'll just start going out when I'm 55 and she's 54 and we're not going to have a baby, or we'll be really careful to make sure. We don't want babies anyway. What's wrong? We love each other. We share the same womb once upon a time, right? We know each other deeply. Why can't we be in love? Love is all that matters. You see how it's going to happen?
Different kinds of love, but
well,
maybe a different conversation.
But it goes on and on. I mean, this is a big topic in the book.
Yeah.
And so begs the question, again, I like questions.
Yeah, I do too.
Why do we have such a taboo on incest?
Mm-hmm.
Why? And I make it a rhetorical question,
yeah.
but I will answer it.
Yeah.
Because people say, the first thing they say is because they want to avoid deformities.
Which, I've actually read studies that's not 100% true.
It's not?
Yeah.
Bingo. First of all, it does raise it, but very slightly.
Yeah.
So instead of a 0.1% chance, it's now 0.2 or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
And it didn't always raise it. It depended on the environment and the...
Right.
The population of study, but...
You have to have, like, five generations in a row...
Yeah, exactly.
In order to have a serious risk
and
of...
And they actually did
deformities.
Studies where going super far out of the range of a similar genetics increased the likelihood
right.
of deformity, so...
Right.
That's a more complicated...
It's complicated.
But yeah.
So it's not really... It can't be
that's
the reason.
That's not the reason.
I mean, you would say, don't do it, but to have such a taboo.
Right.
It's like the idea of it is so disgusting to you and me. It's disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you have a brother or sister, you can't even fathom the idea. Or your father or mother, God forbid.
No.
Right. It's, even the grimace you just made, it didn't used to be that way. Incest was a regular order of the day. It was definitely within the realm of possibilities for most people, even in the early Roman days and the Greek days and other cultures as well.
Sure.
They may have some law in the books about it, but frankly, they decided to do it.
Okay.
Only with the Judeo-Christian mindset do we have such a massive taboo on it. Now, by the way, it's taboo in America. Not so much taboo in most other European countries.
Yeah.
Russia, for example, it's okay so long as you don't flaunt it too much, right? Okay, well, so much for that taboo. I mean, right?
Isn't that kind of the definition of taboo, by the way, though? It's that it's what it looks like to others.
Right. Yeah, it's this.
So it's fine as long as we don't talk about it.
Right. How can that be a taboo? That's like, you can steal from me, but it's all right. It's cool. Don't worry about it. You know, so what if I steal a little bit from the till, right? Or they make it seem like it's jaywalking. You know, jaywalking is technically illegal.
Yeah.
But don't make a fuss about it. We won't care about it.
Right. We'll just look the other way.
Right. But no. It's taboo.
Right.
Really, it's one of the most serious taboos you can think of. You made that face, and you're right to make that face. It's disgusting for us. Why is it disgusting? What if two people just have this attraction for each other? They happen to be brother and sister. And what's wrong with that? They'll say, I love him. She loves me.
Didn't Ilhan Omar marry her brother?
I believe that's the situation. I mean, that's what I heard. And it's disgusting, the whole thing about it. Now, the reason for that is very simple. The reason why we have a taboo is because we want to take sex right out of the family, except for husband and wife, of course. But in every other respect, sex, just take it out. Just know it. And the reason for that is that if you don't do that, the family structure collapses.
Yeah.
Okay. If imagine a mother, she gives birth to a daughter, and the father is in the room, and now she has to worry, okay, when this kid grows up a little bit more, my husband's going to start fondling her. Okay?
Right.
By the way, this still happens anyway, which is a form of incest. But nevertheless, you know, when she's 22 and she's of majority age, she'll decide to, you know, fool around with my... No.
Right.
We don't even want to entertain that as a possibility.
That does destroy the family structure. Absolutely.
So when you set that taboo early on, then you can relax. You can be a family.
Right. Yeah, well, and it also then it allows you to have the intimacy without worrying about that intimacy being complicated and destructive.
Right. It becomes such an obvious thing that you would never engage with your daughter or with your brother or sister.
Mm-hmm. But intimacy is essential to a family structure, but you can't have the intimacy if you're worried that creating, you know, physical intimacy could destroy it. So
it would destroy it.
The
confidence that you have, the one place where you should
China
feel safe.
Now.
Yeah, that's right.
My the sister, power of storytelling.
But the one place you want to feel safe is your family, right? Now that's where it should be.
Yeah.
Of course, many families are not. But think of those people who had a very unsafe family where the father did abuse, sometimes the mother abused.
Sure.
Or there was a brother involved. These people live suffering lives for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely.
They can't grow out of it. It's very hard to grow out of it.
Yeah.
So this is the reason why incest is so powerful against it. Now, there are many other rabbinical scholars who talk about the incest taboo, and they can't quite get around, because the idea is they don't want necessarily to have a specific reason for it. And what I gave you was not a specific reason for it. And the reason why they don't give a specific reason is because if you found out there's a specific reason, then you could work around that specific reason. Right?
Sure.
Like, if you say don't lie, generally speaking, right?
Uh-huh.
But why do we not want lying? Well, because that hurts you. Well, but there's an exception. There's always an exception,
right?
That you can make. Well, lying, and this is, that would be okay in the world of lying. But in incest, no exceptions.
Right.
Right? You cannot work around it. And so God doesn't want you to work, to even think about working around it.
Right.
Because family, it's really about family. It's not about sex. It's about family.
Yeah.
But you're going to see that, going back to godlessness, atheism, you're going to see this growing acceptance of incest.
Wow.
Yeah, and it shocks you, and it shocks me too. But when people rip apart God from society, people will start wondering aloud, well, why do we have this prohibition? I love her. She loves me. I trust her. We've been together ever since we were little kids.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with that? And who are you to tell me not to have intimacy with my sibling?
Right.
Who are you? We know this is what's happening now, right? With so much of else going on in the sexual world. But this is why in Rise of the Sex Machines, I talk a lot about this, that we're having a complete meltdown sexually,
mm-hmm.
romantically, marriage-wise, family-wise, because we are asking these questions, well, why should we have to have marriage? Why should it be between a man and a woman?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why should it be only two people? Right?
So the whole polyamory thing, I never understand why people think, a lot of people, this is what I've heard, that who go into this world, they think it's going to be less complicated. And I'm like, so you know how complicated and difficult it is to be intimate with one human being?
Yeah.
You think by adding, even if you take away all the other issues around that,
yeah.
but just focused on this,
yeah.
you suddenly thought that it was going to be easier to add another person into the image?
That's true. That's true.
Where was the logic involved in that? Because
no.
I'm not seeing it.
No. It's hysterical. You're right. There is no logic to it, but they think that they've gotten it. Like, I give an example of there's a polyamorous quintuple. There are five mm-hmm. people, and it's only one woman, by the way. Four guys. She's pregnant by one of them, and they're going to raise this kid together as a fivesome. And they talk about, the interviewer was very friendly to them, as if somehow they're dealing with a very good thing. You know,
right.
they're pushing a frontier. And so they said, what's your biggest challenge? Well, telling our parents, that was really hard, but they eventually began to realize that it's just old way thinking that it should only be two people. And they just accepted us for who we are. They're really good people. that's the idea.
They're really good people.
And then the interviewer asked, any other issues? Yeah, this thing called, this emotion called jealousy. As if it's a petty thing,
Right, right.
There's a reason. Again, there's the question, why? Why do we have jealousy?
Right.
Jealousy is actually a good thing.
Of course.
Right? Just like hard work is a good thing. You can work
ambition.
Too hard.
Yeah.
Ambitious. You can be too ambitious.
Yeah.
You can like money too much.
Yeah.
You can like sex too much. You
well,
can like
I
alcohol
always,
too much.
I always
but
use...
jealousy is necessary.
Oh,
we,
yeah.
We need it. It keeps people understanding that... Because if there's zero jealousy... That's, you always have to ask what would happen
what
if there's
zero.
No jealousy or no whatever. If there's no jealousy, then everyone would be just profligating with everyone else because there's no jealousy.
Well, you also...
There would be no marriage also.
You also wouldn't have a sense of belonging.
Yeah.
Without jealousy. So, jealousy implies a sense of ownership. And I don't mean that in, I don't want people to construe that as, I own another human being.
No.
But a sense of that, you belong to a relationship. And
there's an expectation. Use that,
yeah,
maybe that word.
An expectation. But I think it comes down to a belonging, where there's, when you have an intimate relationship, there is a sense that that's your person. And you don't want that to be shared with
right.
somebody else. You don't want somebody else to potentially threaten that or get in the way of that connection that you have.
Right.
So, of course,
every person hearing this who's married, who is in a loving relationship,
mm-hmm.
And I really mean that. When I tell them or I talk to them about sex within that intimate relationship, they know, and they're nodding their heads as I say the following, it's the best intimacy
right.
possible. when you really know your partner that well, when you've had kids maybe with that partner, even without kids, it doesn't matter. It's, you know, this is your person. There's no better intimacy than that. Okay, you can have sex with 50 different people in 50 different weeks. You may think you're having a lot of fun with a lot of variety. The reality is each one of them cannot possibly be as good as the truly intimate with your one and only, so to speak, to use, you know, your phrase. It's really fascinating. Now we get to the issue of sex.
Okay.
Which before is a boring you topic, that, you know. But
before you get into that, I have a question that is related to that. Again, kind of play devil's advocate, but Mormons, and I know they don't anymore, but they do believe in polygamy, right? Mm-hmm. But they're very deeply,
right.
I can't speak, religious, right? They mm-hmm. definitely believe in God. So how do you
explain how do I square all that?
Yes. Okay.
I'm glad you asked me that. I happen to know a lot about the LDS community,
okay.
Latter-day Saints.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very much of a big fan of the LDS community.
I am as well.
I'm Jewish.
Yep.
Deeply Jewish. Okay, so great.
I am too.
So
I've heard there's a lot of similarities, actually, and parallels in their
history. There are a lot of parallels.
And I have cousins who have converted to Mormons as well.
They're the only people other than us mm-hmm. who refer to people who are not themselves as Gentiles.
Yes.
Right? So we are Gentiles in the Mormon world.
Right.
And, of course, they're Gentiles in the Jewish world. But that's about it. That's, you know,
yeah.
Okay, so getting to your polygamy question. Yeah. First of all, polygamy was not the same as we think about it today. There's a historical thing. It's not as if, hey, Johnny, you can have a bunch of wives mm-hmm. and have a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Nor was it necessarily for the purpose of growing a lot of kids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that it's don't even think of it like that. What was happening was, as they were trekking across to the West, a lot of women were dying, a lot of men were dying, and they mm-hmm. just had to kind of reconnoiter.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not as if it was this kind of institutionalized understanding. It was more like it was necessary at the time. We have to make do with what we have. So it wasn't like a sexual lust sort of thing. It's not like the cults that you think of in cults today.
Sure.
So in fairness, it's a very different sort of thing. So they're very, very strongly believing that it should be one man, one woman. Not only that, but you shouldn't even have sex until you do get married.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're bonded. You're sealed
mm-hmm.
In the ceremony that they have. I told you I knew a lot about Mormonism.
Yeah, apparently not enough.
I mean, but I really do respect them. And look, I don't believe in the Mormon faith,
mm-hmm.
But I deeply respect it.
Mm-hmm.
And why? Because, you know what? Their results are fantastic, mm-hmm. right? Here's a clean culture that advances the Judeo-Christian mindset.
Yep.
They progress. They contribute to the world.
They do.
They produce great kids.
They do.
Who are kind and thoughtful. Don't have tattoos. I'm not denigrating people that have tattoos, but you get the idea. They have standards that they set for themselves.
Yeah.
They're kind. I like that.
Jung always said, if you want to know the intent of a person, you know, look at the outcome.
Yeah. Exactly right. So I've seen a lot of good out of Mormonism. So I hope that answers your question on that. And yes, I think there's a lot of similarity between mm-hmm. Jews on the one hand and Mormons on the other. They strongly identify with the Jewish community.
Yeah, I've heard that.
One Jew told me once that we should really embrace the Mormons. They're the only Christian group that has not persecuted us. Which there's some truth to that, you know.
Sure.
But they truly love us, and we should truly love them.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I know there's a big difference between and among Christians, Catholics, and Mormons,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of division in that. And I made a podcast on this myself, and I said, please, just unite one way or the other.
Yeah.
Find out what you have in common, and love that commonality. You all believe in Jesus. You all believe mm-hmm. that he died for your sins, and you all believe in God as well. Isn't that good enough?
And I find a lot of the Christians today are very protective of the Jews. They recognize, you know, that...
Oh, we're very lucky to have the Christians today.
And
I tell my Christian friends, Christians are the new Jews. You know, they
are being persecuted.
They're being persecuted.
For sure.
In their own different way today. But getting back to sex, I know that's a very boring topic.
No, sorry.
We gotta get through the sex topic. Yawn. but it's an interesting thing because sex is really changing.
Yes.
One of the things that I'm fascinated by from a sociological point of view. Mm-hmm.
I mean, relationships in general are really changing, but sex is a huge part of why they're changing,
right.
I think.
Very, very different. One of the questions that people don't ask, and it's so simple. I mean, look, we talked before in the beginning of this, why we say thank you, why we say please.
Right.
Here's a question. Mm-hmm. Why, on a scale of 1 to 10, in terms of pleasure, why is sex a 30, right? Mm-hmm. Especially for men, okay? But it's also for women, it's very pleasurable. Why is it that high? Does it really need to be that high? I mean, you give me a
Well, the species would cease to exist.
I understand.
Yeah.
I know that's the common answer. The species would cease to exist. But it doesn't have to be a 30. A 10 is pretty damn good. Mm. You can get me to do a lot of things. You give me a good cappuccino, because I like cappuccinos. I'll do a lot for you. Okay?
Yeah.
And having sex, it's pleasurable. Nine and a half is... You would think it's good enough. Why does it have to be that intense? A 30. It doesn't have to be. You can have the same number of people being produced through sex with a 9 or 9.5 as you could a 30. Isn't it overkill, is what I'm saying? Isn't it like trying to swat a fly with a nuclear bomb? Right? We don't need a nuclear bomb. Get the fly swatter and you're done. Right? Okay, so you understand.
So we've now equated sex with a fly swatter. Oh, with a nuclear bomb, I guess.
Yeah. Well, but the point is, it's overkill. The pleasure part of it, is it that necessary?
Okay.
So, now, the great sages do have an answer for that, and it's very specific. The reason for that is when you engage in truly meaningful sex, hopefully with your married partner, and hopefully for the purpose of creating another life, you are participating in the act of creation. And only God can do creation.
Right.
But you are a deputy in his act of creation. It's fascinating, right? You don't even know how it all works, but there it is. And so that one moment of intense pleasure, in a way you're seeing the glory of God. And many people will say this. I mean, even pastors, and presumably not priests, but pastors and rabbis and reverends, they'll say the time that they feel the most spiritual is the time that they have relations with their wives, with their wives. And I think there's some wisdom to that. And I mean, you're Jewish, you understand that, you know, it's a mitzvah to have sex during Shabbat. It's one of the best times to have it. You know, you'd think, well, why are you mixing this religious stuff? But it's very religious. All the more reason not to play with that fire, right? People treat sex, and this is a main point of a rise of the sex machines, they treat sex with the same... trivial approach as they do eating ice cream. Let's go have ice cream. A lot of people do. You know, let's have sex. That's what the Tinder approach
more,
is all about.
Yeah, sure.
But for the religious among us, sex is very important. And it's a very big part of life. And it's a holy part of life. So, and I respect that a lot. And it's too many questions arise about sex. So, for example, there are these women and men, but I'm speaking more about women now, who will go on Tinder and have a lot of fun with a lot of guys, and they want to meet somebody, and then they marry him. Okay, so imagine that happens. They've been fooling around, and now they get married, and now they expect to be the one and only, to use our phrase that we've had before. And I think to myself, how is that work? I don't get it. You treat sex so, it's just sex before you get married, but after you get married, it's now it's holy. I mean, it's not really holy to them, but you understand.
Right, right.
They had these expectations, the word we used before, where they're supposed to be only with each other. And if you violate that, well, that's a terrible violation of trust. How does that work? I don't get it. It's like, you know, pearls, right? Is there anything else in life that it's valuable one day, mm-hmm. but not valuable the next, right?
Well,
and then valuable again the following day.
I think for somebody who doesn't have the religious, you know, underpinning, then to them it has more to do with like a commitment.
Yeah.
So it's a choice that they've made.
It is, but if they've had such a funky attitude towards sex before, a trivial attitude towards sex, it's just sex attitude
mm-hmm.
before they got married. P.S. Why did they ever get married in the first place? That's another story. I don't understand why an atheist gets married. Don't understand. Okay, especially for men. Why would they do that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I'm just saying that the identity of sex is different depending on what you want for that moment. It's a little bit like abortion. In fact, it's very much like abortion now that I think about it. If you don't want the baby, it's called a fetus. If you do want the child, then it's called your precious little bundle of joy.
Right.
On the way.
Right.
Right. Bun in the oven. Right.
Right. Right.
So, but it's a clump of cells if you don't want it. It can't be both.
Right.
It just can't. So abortion is abortion. It's not a good thing. So now here's another thing about sex. And I discussed this at length. The CDC tells us that the more sex you have, the more dangerous it is, right? The incidence of chlamydia, herpes, gonorrhea.
It increases your odds, yeah.
Increases your, I mean, but no, it's wildly, it's crazy what's going on. In the past 10 years alone, there's been not just a spike, but a hurricane of new STDs. A hurricane of it. In fact, they say to call it a spike is to call a hurricane a strong wind. It is so massive going on.
Wow.
And the CDC is saying nothing about it. They say a lot about COVID.
Yeah.
They say nothing about this massive situation going on.
Interesting.
There are 350 million new cases among those four diseases, just those four diseases I mentioned, every year.
Okay? Interesting.
And does not include AIDS. It does not include all the other things, papillomavirus or whatever is it. But you get the idea. There's a lot of other sexual diseases, and you would think this is a crisis on hand.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the weird part that I never understood. If you are married,
mm-hmm.
or if you're, forget about marriage, if you're just committed to one person and only have sex with that person,
right.
not only will you not get those diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming both are faithful to each other, right?
Right.
But it's super duper healthy for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? But isn't that interesting?
Physiological.
You get the same amount of sex.
Right.
In a year, let's say, just to use a time frame. A lot. Let's say you know, if you have a healthy relationship, let's say you do it every day, almost every 300 times a year.
Right.
Okay. You do it with a committed partner. That's super duper healthy.
Right.
Okay. Now, go on this side, and you have the same number of sexual activity, 300, with different men, different women. It's extremely dangerous,
right.
extremely unhealthy.
Right.
That's fascinating to me, that the sexual act can be super duper unhealthy in one circumstance,
mm-hmm.
super duper healthy
mm-hmm.
in the other. And to me, you know, we talk about God all the time.
Right.
So where is God in all this? What is God telling us?
Right.
Is it that hard to figure out? He's saying, get married, keep it within the marriage, and understand that this is fire you're playing with. This is a holy thing that I've given you, this sex business.
Mm-hmm.
And you're treating it, this gift that I've given you, you're treating it like a child treats ice cream. And that's a shame. But it's super dangerous. I liken it to a child happening upon a plutonium rod in a nuclear facility.
Right.
And say, look, it's a glowy stick. It looks so cool. I'd like to play with it. Woo! Right? And it's dangerous.
Yeah.
That's the way we ought to treat sex.
So I thought I read that it was the Jews who created the institution of marriage.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Judeo-Christian mindset created marriage.
Yeah.
The Christians, you know, continued on with a
sure.
very important tradition.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this notion of family, the Jews created a lot of things.
They're the Old Testament, so it's older.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly right.
that wasn't to say the Christians don't subscribe to it, but...
Right. The Jews created the notion, well, I mean, with God, of course,
yeah.
God created
right,
it,
right.
of course, but he gave
but
the Ten Commandments to the Jews.
Yeah.
And before that, he gave the Seven Commandments, the pre-Noah commandments to all the world. And whether they took it up and listened to it is another story. But the Ten Commandments he gave to the Jews. The Jews also invented something very funny called time.
Jews invented time?
They invented time. The notion of time
fascinating.
It really is, right? There's a great book about this called The Gift of the Jews. It's written by Thomas Cahill. He's an Irish Catholic, actually. And he showed his love of the Jews, and this was the greatest gift, time. Because before the Jews, every civilization was living in a circle. Think of it like a rat's wheel, right?
Uh-huh.
And you lived and you died, you lived and died, and you did something for the king. There was no sense of progress. There was
okay.
no sense of time. It wasn't even a sense of that you were the son of anybody, the daughter of anybody. It was very akin to the animal world today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, polar bear, he's born to his mother. The mother takes care of him for 6 months, and off into the woods he goes, and he may not recognize his mother later on, 2 years later.
Right.
The father, nowhere to be seen, right?
Right, right.
Exactly. So that's the way it was back then. And then the Jews, they left that circle. And that's why in what Christians call the Old Testament, what you and I might call the Bible,
mm-hmm.
There's this whole begat business. He begat this, he begat that, begat, begat, begat. It may be boring to a lot of people as you read it, but it actually is setting up time when you think about it. That blows your mind, right?
Yes.
It's pretty cool. So that's the reason why they do that. Because, and there's no reference to AD 1976 or
right.
anything else, because that's a float, you know, depends on which culture wants to command the time calendar. But with the begetting business, you have a sense, okay, that was 3 generations ago, 5 generations ago, and so on. So, and then there's this notion of always improving.
Right.
Whether that means justice, whether mm-hmm. that means the notion of truth,
right.
family. Tikkun olam, right, as they say, to make the world a better place. And this is our mission. Our mission is to search out for God, to see that God is there. I don't know if you want to talk more about this, but one of the things I would conclude with
yeah.
is just to say, you know, one of the things I love about Judaism and the Christian world as well, for that
yeah.
matter, is we all share so much.
Mm-hmm.
In Judaism, there's a 613 mitzvot. So the mitzvah is, the plural of mitzvah is mitzvot. And these are commandments that we've gleaned from the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the very first ones is, you shall know that there is a God. Okay? Now think about what that means. It doesn't say you shall believe that there is a God. We
know.
Don't do that.
Right.
You shall know. Which means that you have to learn it. You have to figure this out yourself. Figure out that I, God, am real. You must figure that yourself. You have a duty to do that. Not just to believe, know it.
Wow. I don't think I've ever heard that.
Yeah.
I did not know that. That's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is a beautiful way to conclude. I do have one other question for you.
Please.
Because you talk about atheism kills... And certainly the rise of the sex machines, the destruction of relationships, family. I'm curious your thought, and this kind of alludes to it, but on, like, agnostic people. People who, atheism, you have suggested that it's destructive, it
right.
kills relationships, people, individuals, societies.
Right.
So what are your thought on, people who... Because I think there's a lot of people who are And not just, and maybe it's not a coincidence. Maybe there's a correlation mm-hmm. between this, but I think there's a pandemic of lack of purpose.
Right.
And there's a pandemic psychology, we call it the borderline personalities, but it's really just a lack of identity. And some of it, I think, is mm-hmm. by design. I think
right.
they've destroyed people's sense of self. But then there's a real rise of people who, like your friends, that I would like to believe. I wouldn't necessarily, I don't know that he's really an atheist. You know, he's somebody
right.
who's struggling with this lack of ability to. So, mm-hmm. yeah, what are your thoughts on the people who are agnostic and where that fits into society and the consequences of that?
I used to think to myself that I really respected, I could respect the agnostics because they
yeah.
simply say, look, I don't know, the jury's still out
mm-hmm.
on this God business. And so I'm not saying there's no God, but I'm not confirmed that there is a God.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds cute, but if you understand that you have an obligation to find God, then you're not doing the work necessary. You're trapped. You decided that you kind of like this little area called agnosticism, and you don't want to kind of push the door
mm-hmm.
to discover more. It's not that, well, in a sense, you're being lazy, right? But I also feel sorry for you because you're missing out. If you're really agnostic, if you really mean it, and you're open to the possibility that there's a God, then why not research more? Figure this out. It's a little bit like what your fantastic analogy. I'm so upset that I didn't think about it.
You're welcome to use it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, now I always like giving credit. But this notion of I want to be really healthy,
mm-hmm.
I believe in being healthy, and they're doing nothing
mm-hmm.
to be healthy. They don't explore what it takes to be healthy.
Right.
How can I look like that beautiful woman? How can I look like that well-cut man?
Right.
Right? And, you know, to me, I go to the gym once in a while, and before COVID, of course. And what I did is
the best cure for COVID is to do everything that destroys your immune system.
Right, yeah, exactly, naturally. But
you don't work out. I mean,
but what would
like
you do if you really wanted to be healthy? If you really wanted to look like that, healthy guy who looks, you know, like you want to look like, right?
Right?
What do you do? You maybe you approach him and you say, "Hey, what